Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of PatriotFamilies.com, a group of people who understand that we, every single one of us, are the nation. And that without our concern and our knowledge and our attention, this great land of ours will not flourish as its founders wished it to do. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our topic is the Common Core and the Borg Collective. I've drawn the parallels between those two things many times on my show, and I wanted to devote this evening to understanding and expressing my views about the dangers that we face with the kind of mechanistic progressive thinking that is giving us Common Core. Most of us are very approving of the idea of standards. We want to have standard weights and measures. I want to know that a pound of flour in my local store is the same amount of flour in a local store in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or Hilo, Hawaii, or San Francisco, California. I want to know that the gallon of gasoline I buy at the corner 7-Eleven is the same amount of gasoline, no matter what 7-Eleven in what state in this nation I buy it. I want to know that standards are in place to determine that when I purchase an object that is supposed to do a specific task that and is labeled as such, that that object will do the task it is designed to do. I do not want to have to live under caveat emptor, buyer beware. I want to have the chance to do the things that I want to do and be reasonably trusting that the objects I do them with are designed to actually do what they're advertised to do. So standards are a positive buzzword for most people. We measure everything against a standard. We have standard measurements of height, whether you use the international units, the metric system, or whether you use the incredibly confusing but very familiar English measure. I know that an inch is an inch, and every ruler that I buy is going to mark it out correctly. But as popular a word as standards is, when it is applied to things and processes, it is a very slippery and very dangerous word to apply to human beings. We like to believe that we have personal standards. I know I like to believe that. I like to feel that my standards of behavior are such that make me a valuable member of society, a good and kind person, someone who understands that treating others the way I wish to be treated is not just a rule, but a common sense way to live comfortably, happily, and productively in my community. We like to believe that standards of behavior make our society run more smoothly. For example, not bursting into profanity in front of one's minister is a standard of behavior. Not walking about the grocery store wearing absolutely nothing at all, and if you are not visiting a nudist colony, is an inappropriate behavior, and we have certain standards that tell us so. Again, standards are a good thing when we are looking at the ways in which we all agree to exist as a group, as a community, as a town, a city, a family, a state, whatever. Those kind of standards applied to human beings, standards of behavior measured by society's need for some form of cohesion and some form of at least a degree of peaceful coexistence, we can accept. The Common Core and the minds behind it don't use the word standards in the same way that you and I do. To the progressive mechanistic thinker, standards, such as Common Core, are measuring sticks to determine the value of individual human beings. Almost as if we were judging cattle for their conformation and success as breeding stock, or determining whether or not a part was up to standard, and if not, eliminating it from the assembly line by throwing it into the recycle bin to be melted down and turned into a more standard part. And this, unfortunately, is the progressive way of using the word standards, particularly when it comes to our educational system. They talk about rigor when they mention the standards. Rigor, in the non-medical sense, in the medical sense, it's shorthand for rigor mortis, the stiffness of the body after death, and sometimes I think the rigor that the progressives are mentioning is probably even more apropos for that than it is for our education system. But what progressives mean when they use the term rigorous or standards with more rigor is making students achieve a particular mastery whether they understand it or not, and when they do not understand it, basically marking them with data and tracking as being substandard academically, and therefore nudging, guiding, or steering them into a substandard spot in society, usually in the workplace or in the social hierarchy. Progressives don't want you to understand that their roots go back to the eugenics movement of the early 20th century. They do not want you to understand that the rigor they're talking about is not academic excellence. It is adherence to a specific planned track for your child, to make it impossible for your child to progress beyond a certain level if they do not do well on standardized tests or have difficulties or specific learning problems that need special presentation of material. Progressives have been behind a lot of the current dominance in our public education of special education and special needs coming first on a school's agenda. Their outward stated motive for this is embodied by the name of the legislation, No Child Left Behind, meaning that we can't stand for the poor little kid who can't read well to feel isolated and left out of things among his peers and made fun of. So we'll be sure to put him in the same classes with people who do read well, and that way he will somehow or other absorb their ability, and they will see that he's really a good kid and a nice guy, and they should be friends with him even though he can't read and probably doesn't know that 2 + 2 always do make 4. Progressives spend a great deal of time crafting ways to explain their goals that will resonate with people who do not think, which unfortunately in this country today is probably about 60% of the population. And I'm being generous there. It's not the inability to think that progressives count on, ladies and gentlemen. It's the reluctance to think that they understand exists among many, many people. We as a species enjoy being comfortable. Almost everything we do in our lives is done to promote our comfort in some way. Even things that are physically difficult or challenging, we are doing because they will, if we once master them or complete them, make them more comfortable in some fashion. Emotionally comfortable, monetarily comfortable, physically comfortable, like in building a new room on one's house so you can sit outside in air-conditioned comfort when the temperature is 100 degrees. And progressives understand this desire for comfort. Unfortunately, intellectual comfort is generally an excellent doorway through which progressives can push their Borg collective agenda. And that's what Common Core and progressive thinking's ultimate goal is. Perhaps eventually, even with the happy little technological implants that we saw on the Star Trek Next Generation series on the real Borg, or as real as fantasy sci-fi shows can get. Progressives do not like those who think, because people who think ask questions. People who think want to know why. People who think say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And progressives have always counted on people feeling good rather than thinking well. Our feelings are not the product of our right or our left brain or intellectual cognizant reasoning. Our feelings are gut primitive reactions to whether or not we are quote-unquote comfortable in any given situation or with any given thing. When we are not comfortable, our feelings are exacerbated. We get angry. We get sad. We get nervous. We get anxious. And we look for ways to eliminate these uncomfortable emotional states. And when that is the way we approach the world, operating solely on our feelings of comfort, we are ripe for exploitation by progressives and their mechanistic approach to things. I find it ironic that a group of people whose thinking is so machine-like should use emotion in others as such a powerful tool. But that's what they see it as, ladies and gentlemen. in spite of all the touchy-feely, feel good about yourself, self-esteem building, feel compassion for those less fortunate that comes out of their mouths. None of those things are based in real emotion. They have nothing to do with the kind of feeling that we are taught is our gift from our Creator. Caritas, love, as in faith, hope, and charity. Charity, agape, the love of others, equal to the love of self. Progressives are not interested in actually feeling these things. They are only interested in saying them so that you will believe that they feel them and care about you. They don't. They care about their ideal mechanical society. And over the past 30 years, through their infiltration into the halls of academia in liberal arts colleges that train our teachers, and then into the classrooms and into the administrations of our public schools, they are giving us a clear picture of what we have to look forward to. Under progressive Common Core standards, what matters about our children is their test score, or the mechanical measurement of their heart rate and respiration and blood pressure and temperature and emotional status as evinced by biofeedback machines hooked into their desks at school, so that everything can be reduced to a graph and your child will have a nice little printout of exactly who and what he is designed to be based on all of this lovely data that they are collecting. Unfortunately, because so many of us enjoy our comforts, we don't want to think that those for whom we have voted and those we have sent to make our laws and execute those laws and by extension review and clarify and determine whether or not those laws are correct according to the framework of our Constitution could betray us in such a fashion. We don't want to think about that because it's uncomfortable. We don't want to believe that someone we trust could be that venal and that cold and that conniving and that manipulative. We can believe it about people we know personally. Every single person out there listening has met someone, I'm sure, who is a functioning sociopath or marginally functioning sociopath. And you know the kind of person I mean, the one whose only interest is his or her good and who will do anything in order to achieve what he or she wants, no matter who gets in the way, and has no feeling at all for the emotions of another person. The only thing that matters is that their emotions are fed properly. Like my friend Linda says, like our current chief executive in the Oval Office. You may think of these people as sociopaths, as egomaniacal, as dictators in the making, as manipulative. All of those adjectives and nouns do fit them. That is what the progressive movement is based on. The people who espouse it and join it, at first, very often, are people who truly do believe that somehow or other, we human beings can make the world perfect for everyone. Most of them are very young. Progressives' ability to understand the nature of humanity usually hasn't gotten past about 13 or 14 years old. I work in a middle school, for those of you who may not know me, and every single day, whenever a subject is brought up for discussion, like something that happened this week, that indicates, that gives you a glimpse into the way that these children think about how they can make the world better and what's wrong with the world. Every single one of them is perfectly convinced that everybody should be equal, everybody should have everything they want, nobody should have any more than anybody else. These are 13-year-olds, ladies and gentlemen. They do not have the life experience or the reasoning ability to understand that the only way you can make that happen is if you give everybody on Earth a frontal lobotomy except yourself and herd them into a nice pen where they get fed three times a day and somebody bathes them occasionally. But these are 13-year-old kids. I expect this from 13-year-olds. I do not expect it from adults, especially adults who have set out to achieve success in the realm of politics and statesmanship. Those who start out as progressives, as touchy-feely liberals, and I don't mean liberal in the old-fashioned sense. I mean liberal in the way that it is projected as today, meaning a socialist, a communist, a Fabian socialist, a Marxist, all of these other lovely little labels, which really don't describe the people themselves. They describe the ideas that they find appealing. It is no wonder that our current president has been elected twice with a majority of the youth vote. Because for the last 30 years, progressives have been successfully keeping our quote-unquote youth at the mental age of 13 until they run into the hard rock of trying to earn a living. And those youngsters, once they hit that hard rock, after about 3 or 4 years of not having everything work out the way they planned for it to do when they were 13, generally either wake up or die. Because those are your two choices. You cannot stay 13 forever. You cannot make assumptions that are not based in fact and expect to succeed. And the assumption that human beings can redesign the human race and make it better simply by passing legislation and restricting choice is as false as you can get. As far as I know, ants have not created the space shuttle, nor have they discovered ways to prevent human beings from stepping on them or destroying their homes, or using insecticides to get rid of them. Because ants are engineered and designed to fit into one specific niche and remain there until their lives end. Ants are the very model, ladies and gentlemen, of what progressives would like to do with your children. And progressives don't want you to think about that. They want you to think that Common Core and the data mining and the data-driven steering a student into the proper course is for your own good. I really hate that phrase, ladies and gentlemen. I have always hated it. Because every time I've heard it, it's come from some person whose sole purpose in using it was to force me to do something that I did not want to do, that I thought was wrong for me, because they assumed that they were infinitely wiser and much more capable of running my life than I was. It may have been legitimate when I was 4, and my mother said it to me. But now that I'm considerably more than 4, it's not. Yet there are millions of people in our country who are still thinking like 4-year-olds and replacing mommy with government. Well, if the government says it's for our own good, obviously they must be right. If the government says we shouldn't have any of those nasty trans fats, well, then they should not let anybody make any food that has them in it. And if the government says that chocolate has bad effects on people if they eat too much of it, well, then it makes sense that everybody should have a chocolate ration card and only be allowed to taste it on Christmas, because that way we won't have all these bad effects. If the government says that our health insurance companies are evil, rapacious thieves who all want to get filthy rich at our expense, well, obviously then we should embrace the wonders of Obamacare, where everybody will be insured. Of course, we won't be able to actually sign up for this mythical insurance, and we won't be able to actually keep what was promised to us that we could keep, but we might be allowed to keep it for a little while until they take it away from us again, but it's going to be more expensive. Well, you see, government must know all these things. It must be for our own good. What is marginally acceptable when spoken to a 4-year-old, ladies and gentlemen, is utterly unacceptable when spoken to adult members of the voting public. And yet, because for over 30 years, progressives have dominated our education system and created an electorate who believes that someone else knows what's good for them more than they do, it has succeeded. But the cracks are showing. There are still people like me, and those of you listening tonight, and my friends in the chat room, Doc and Bill and Linda and Yolanda and Moovin and Inquisition, and we've got another guest on, all of you, thank you for being here, by the way. There are still people who think, and there are still people who understand that asking why is one of the most important things a free person can do. My father taught me from the time I was old enough to talk, which I actually did at a year old, so that kind of explains why I'm here tonight. He told me that the only stupid question was the one you didn't ask. Because if you do not ask questions, then those who give all the answers will never be doubted. And no one will ever investigate just exactly how true or false that answer is. One of the reasons that our nation has progressed the way it has and become as powerful as it is because our children ask millions of questions in and out of the classroom. But Common Core doesn't like that. Common Core would prefer that children ask questions only so that they can meet an objective standard on a test. I see this over and over and over again. It's the one answer fits all. That is true in math and science, ladies and gentlemen, but not in the humanities, which is one of the reasons why Common Core has focused first and foremost on math and science. Because people will nod their heads wisely and accept the fact that, well, of course, you know, a slope-intercept form of a linear equation is y equals mx plus b. You know, that's fact, and it is. And it works beautifully if you're given 2 points on a line. You can deduce the equation that describes that line. Works every time. And if you follow the steps, guess what? You've got the right equation. In math and science, one answer, one correct answer is perfectly logical and reasonable and rational. But when it comes to human interaction, relationships, the arts, the plastic arts, music, literature, sociology, which is more of an art than it is a science in spite of progressives, that one answer fits all doesn't work. Because we have had thousands of cultures in our history, ladies and gentlemen, some of which we know a great deal about because they had the written word, and others about which we know very little because they predate the development of writing. And every single one of those cultures has come up with unique and interesting ways to explain the universe, to interact with it and with one another, to discover, to examine, to explore, to question, to imagine, and to create. In a world where there is ever only one right answer, what happens to creativity? What happens to innovation? What happens to the outside-the-box thinker who creates something never thought of before that makes the lives of every human being on this earth better in some way? Even the one answer, one correct answer in science and math is but a stepping stone to that creativity, that genius, that innovation. But Common Core and the progressives behind it do not want to focus on the humanities. They are not interested in social studies subjects. They are definitely not interested in classical literature because there's too much scope for thinking there. They don't want children to be taught cursive because cursive, in addition to being a faster method of communicating and writing, is also an art form. And each and every individual's cursive is unique as his or her fingerprints. But being unique is not a positive in the progressive Borg collective. Unique means you're not interchangeable with the other part that fits in your particular spot. Unique means that you have value that is not quantifiable on a data chart. Unique means that you're probably not going to just stand there with your hand out and your mouth open and say, "Thank you, master," and go quietly back to the slave quarters. Unique is likely to question. Unique is likely to invent and circumvent the wonderful, lovely rules that are put there for our own good. Homeschooling, as my friend Linda mentions, is one way in which those of us who still ask why are circumventing the poison in many of our public schools. Others of us who see the danger ahead are lobbying and raising our voices to get back more control over where we send our children to school if we cannot school them at home. With tax credits, with voucher systems, with the ability to send our kids to schools where their uniqueness is recognized and applauded, and not shoved off in a corner or put in a box that they can't get out of. One of the greatest perils of Common Core and the type of thinking that created it, ladies and gentlemen, is that it makes the average the goal. To excel is politically incorrect. Because if you excel at something, you will hurt the feelings of those who do not excel at that particular thing. Now, that's putting it bluntly. Progressives wrap it up in a lot more pretty paper with bows and spangles and little bells on it. But that's basically what the whole bit about eliminating assemblies recognizing academic achievement, or everybody gets a trophy, or eliminating the position of the honor of valedictorian in high school graduating classes. The Mediocre, The World of Harrison Bergeron, a short story by Kurt Vonnegut that I read on the air last year. That is the progressive heaven, the progressive utopia, the progressive Eden into which we are all being nudged by the progressives holding elected office in our national government. I wonder, among these progressives, how many actually believe that they are incredibly unique and wise and powerful and brilliant and perfect, and it is their duty to guide the rest of us poor sheep. And how many of them actually know that they are none of those things? And as a matter of fact, probably not very bright to go along with it. You can only stand out if you're average in a world of people who are below average, ladies and gentlemen. You can only have power if those around you lack it. In a country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. That, in a nutshell, is pretty much the progressive mindset. They don't say that, but that is the underlying mindset. They are one-eyed men and women, and they are doing everything they can to create a nation full of blind citizens who reach out to grasp someone's hand so they can be led to a comfort station and be happy to have arrived there. Progressive ideology and progressive thinking is not about for your own good, ladies and gentlemen, or for anybody's good except theirs. Progressives see the individual as an incredibly dangerous concept. Individuals achieve things. Individuals invent things. Individuals imagine things. They are less likely to herd together and wait for a bellwether to lead them to the pond for a drink. And if you want to be a bellwether, if you want to be the shepherd with the crook and the flail, like the Egyptian pharaohs, you've got to make sure that you make everybody into a complacent sheep in order to be comfortable yourself, in your comfort station of power. I don't like making progressives comfortable, ladies and gentlemen, because when they're comfortable, I know that I am definitely not going to be. I am going to be marginalized and defamed and criticized and demonized and called names and told that I am racist and bigoted and anachronistic, and I could go through about 50 different adjectives, pejorative adjectives, that would be used to convince people that I am absolutely horrible and nobody should ever listen to a word I say because I am corrupt and rotten and I hate everybody. And this is the way that progressives hold on to their power. Comes right back to that don't think, just feel scenario. Progressives may not be very wise, ladies and gentlemen, but we can't say that they aren't very smart about manipulating others. They are. They understand and use the fact that emotion is a very powerful thing. And that when people are caught up in emotion, they do not think about the consequences of what they do. All you have to do to understand this mindset is to hang around middle school students 5 days a week for 9 months a year. I don't recommend it for those who have the least problem with nervous disorders. I'm afraid you probably would actually commit yourself after about a week of it. You have to be a little bit unusual to do it for a living. But I've worked with middle school age students for 40 years now, and I'm still here, and nobody's committed me yet. So some of us, I guess, are designed to be among these darling little creatures without losing their minds. But you will see exactly what I mean about progressives and how they understand the 13-year-old mindset, because they share it. 13 and 14-year-olds inevitably wind up getting in trouble with rules and regulations because they are in a state of flux 90% of the time through physical changes, emotional changes, that dreaded creature, puberty. 90% of the time, their emotions are making their decisions and not their brains. And that is not at all uncommon, and it's not odd, and it's not sick or abnormal or anything else. It's being 13. That age group is the most full of upheavals and emotional traumas of any of the cycles of human life. And 13-year-olds, and I'm saying that as the middle of it, it basically is from 12 to about 16, do not understand, generally, how to set emotion aside and think before they do something. They feel it, and so they do it. The hippie generation, of which I am a product since I was born in 1946, was not all that popular with me. I didn't run around protesting this, that, and the other, and, you know, ironing my hair or joining a commune or this, that, and the other. Because, unfortunately or fortunately, my brain's always worked. Even in the throes of adolescence, it worked. So I didn't really buy into the tune-in, turn-out, and drop-out philosophy of Timothy Leary and the other stuff. But I do remember a great many friends who did. And I kind of looked at them, bewildered. I couldn't quite figure out why they wanted to do the things they were doing. But as I got older, I began to understand that there is a very powerful pull that all of us feel to allow our emotions, our feelings, our hearts to rule our heads. I have felt it many times. I am just as capable of feeling love and compassion and sorrow at the pain of someone else as anybody else in this world. More than some, I think. But I also know that operating on feeling alone is as foolish and potentially dangerous as operating on intellect alone. We need to address both parts of our nature. And we need to teach our children to address and use both parts as well. We do not need them to feel their way through an academic progression to a high school graduation. We need them to think their way through the academics. The feeling part comes in the social interactions among the kids themselves, which, in the academic setting, spill over a lot of the time into the classroom and its ability to create an atmosphere in which learning is the primary thing. And this is expected. Anybody who has taught at all, either as a sub or as a regular teacher, or even can remember back to when they were in middle school or junior high and high school, knows that all of the dramas that went on during that 6 years or so were absolutely earth-shaking when we were that age, and by the time we got to be 25, 26, 27, we could look back on them and think, oh my God, why did I get so upset about that? But we are adults, ladies and gentlemen. We have learned, otherwise we wouldn't have survived, how to put the two parts of our natures together, how to act on our feelings and also think about what we're doing when we do. Progressives do not want adults as the citizens of their ideal state, ladies and gentlemen. They want eternal children. Children who look to others to clean up the consequences of emotional reactions without thinking. They want children who are dependent upon the older and wiser to make their decisions for them because they cannot make a decision on their own. They want children who are kept safe and warm and comfortable so that they do not have to face failures or pain or grief or loss. Because children need adults. The human animal, top of the mammalian tree, has the longest maturation period of any animal species on the planet. All the rest of the mammals are fully mature, at least by the time they reach maybe 8 or 10. When I'm thinking of, you know, elephants who have an incredibly long lifespan, theirs is almost equal to ours. The same thing with some of the higher primates, gorillas and chimpanzees. Our children don't really enter into breeding age, which is the first step into adulthood, until they're between 12 and 16. So their childhood is quite long. And they need adults during that childhood because they do not have the life experience, the physical skills, the emotional balance, or the intellectual attainments to be able to cope on their own in a civilized society. They need mentoring by adults. They need teachers and ministers and parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents and coaches and instructors and scout leaders and club advisors. They need adults because we do have the experience and we can hopefully try to ease some of the bumps and bruises to get them through that childhood so that they can begin to grow into the kind of adults who will be able to take over when we are no longer capable or are no longer here. Progressives want to be the adults, ladies and gentlemen, and they want the rest of us to remain the children. The ideal progressive utopia would be progressive leaders who are kept alive by transplants and anti-aging devices almost eternally and rule over everyone who is 16 years old or younger. Because that is the only way they're going to get what they want. They want us all to remain children. I've said before that the only way to keep people subjected and enslaved under a tyrannical government is to keep them ignorant and afraid. And progressives understand this. And that is their goal. Just like any other dictator or tyrannical regime, they want a frightened, ignorant, dependent society over which, blinded by those things, they are the one-eyed men who rule. And Common Core is one of the ways that they hope to achieve this. Because they are looking at academic success, academic performance, and academic goals as being predictable based on the data they collect on each child. In other words, each of our children is a little machine. And once they plug it into the proper outlet and read its circuits and determine its performance capabilities and its physical makeup, they can determine into which receptacle it will be plugged to function for the good of all in the collective once it achieves physical adulthood. My friend Linda, my friend Bill said that there was one of the state governors has vetoed Common Core. I saw that on, I believe it was on Blaze, and somebody put a link on Facebook. More and more people out there, ladies and gentlemen, are listening, and they're paying attention to the implications of Common Core. They are asking why. And they are looking ahead and they are seeing that what sounds good may not be good. And they're beginning to ask the stupid question, which isn't stupid at all. My state, Virginia, avoided the involuntary imposition of Common Core by having its own standards of learning testing that met the expectations of the Department of Education. So we were not, in effect, carrot and sticked into accepting Common Core and the materials thereof. Because the big carrot and stick, the way that they are getting this garbage implemented, is the almighty dollar. If your school in your neighborhood, in your town, doesn't meet specific standards according to the school accreditation, you do not receive the funding from the federal government that you budget into paying your teachers, repairing your schools, purchasing instructional materials, refurbishing classrooms, providing school buses, and staff. When states become shackled to the government udder in order to have teachers teaching in their schools, then they no longer have the freedom to say no to things like Common Core. And that is what's happening. Because, unfortunately, we are taking another very, very good thing, technology, and making it the end-all be-all of success in education. Every school wants a laptop for every student. Everybody's got to have a flash drive. We have to have new computer labs. We have to have a better wireless system. We have to have smart boards, Promethean boards, computerized desktops. We have to have all this stuff. Otherwise, we're not going to look good, and people won't want to live in our town. They'll move over to the town next door that has all these things. And we won't have our tax base anymore, so we won't be able to pay our teachers and our administrators and our salaries to our school board or our superintendent or all of this stuff. So we've got to have all these bells and whistles. We've got to have all this stuff, because otherwise we can't compete. Again, technology is a good thing, and many of the technological developments really will help kids learn better. But not if we don't teach them to read first. It isn't the bells and whistles, ladies and gentlemen. It isn't the brand new computer lab or the shiny new classroom that has light sensors so the lights turn on when you open the door so the teacher doesn't have to reach around the corner and flip a switch. Yeah, we have those in some new classrooms in my school, and that's nice. But none of that matters if there aren't teachers who care about teaching sitting in that cotton-picking classroom giving your children the knowledge they've acquired. And Common Core and its teach-to-the-test, data-driven standards is making good teachers, excellent teachers, superior teachers take a second look at their jobs and say, I don't want to do this anymore. And when they leave, you're going to get the bureaucrat whose job is to, quote-unquote, facilitate the technological classroom. Meaning memorize the owner's manual to the standardized test so you can gently nudge the kid to get the correct answer out of pick four. Common Core makes teachers unnecessary, ladies and gentlemen. There was a YouTube video, I think it was YouTube, that I saw and that I shared on my Facebook page, of a young man, and I believe it was South Carolina, who spoke in front of his state legislature, he's a high school student, against Common Core. He was articulate, bright, passionate, and sincere. And he stood up and told the truth about how Common Core and the ideas behind it will make teaching as he knows it obsolete. A gifted teacher, ladies and gentlemen, is not just someone who knows the material and can recite it. A gifted teacher has a passion for watching children learn. And the imagination and desire to present material in as whatever way will help make that little light bulb over your child's head shine quicker and brighter. And this kind of teaching and this kind of person is not going to be a machine tender who plugs your child into the computer at 7:45 in the morning and unplugs him at 2:15 and sends him home with an A on a standardized test that uses exactly the same questions that he has been going over for 4 weeks so that he recognizes them when he sees them, even though he really doesn't understand what they're asking. That is Common Core, ladies and gentlemen. With all the pretty ribbons and shiny wrapping paper and sparkly and tinkly little bells removed. That is Common Core. That is the doorway to the progressive utopia of the Borg Collective, where there is no I. There is only we. Where the group is mother, father, sister, brother, husband, wife, and child. Ugh. My friend California Living says that Common Core equals all essays are now considered past, and that is not at all untrue. It's quite true. And the idiocy of, well, even if you get the wrong answer, if you can explain how you got it, then we'll mark it as correct in math. even in some place where there is only one correct answer, they manage to turn the whole idea of learning inside out, ladies and gentlemen. Progressivism and its effect on education is utterly insane. It flies in the face of rational sanity. It makes no sense because it denies the very nature of human beings and the human brain. We are not plug-in components of a giant machine, and God forbid that we should ever become so. Those of you who have children in school, or grandchildren, or nieces and nephews, talk with them. Look at their textbooks. Look at their tests. Have a discussion about what they've learned. Not just a question and answer, true, false session. A discussion. And see whether or not that A on the test means that I understand this or that I memorized all the answers from the study guide, which was a copy of the test. Have a caller, so hold on. I think that's my friend Linda. Hello.
Hi, it's me. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, sure.
This Common Core is so pervasive, and it's so, you know, it's like this. It's as bad as the 2,700-page Obamacare
Law.
It's that disgusting, or the 40-chapter Agenda 21, which all of this stems from, this New World Order. The progressives are doing this, I'm quite sure, to replace teachers with, you know, robotic facilitating bureaucratic Lilliputians, I'm quite convinced of. And then with technology, when you said plugged into the machine, oh, believe me, they're working on that. The singularity.
I know.
Look, we're getting it from all sides. It's not supposed to make sense. It makes about as much sense as the collectivization of Uncle Joe, you know, back in the Ukraine.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
So this is what you're up against. And that's what they want. They want a complete amps and four-year-old mentality. Everybody in the wagon, and who the hell's going to pull it? I don't know. But, this is not good.
And they have spent 30 years in our public schools creating an electorate that will give it to them, Linda, because they have spent their time making sure that children remain children, that we coddle and baby and we protect and we wrap in bubble wrap and we assure them that they are entitled to complete happiness, complete safety, and a risk-free life.
Right.
Well, doggone it, they're not. And unfortunately, when you say that, when you say that children have to fall down and skin their knees, you're immediately a child abuser. You know?
Yeah, they're gonna pull the Alinsky model and they're gonna vilify you. You know, you're either a bigot or a racist, and it's all Bush's fault. You know, I mean, that's exactly where it all leads to. It doesn't make sense, and that's why. And I noticed the mediocrity creeping in the early '80s. You know, with just from observing people on the street, the women were allowing themselves to get fatter. They were dressing like they were homeless, even though they weren't.
Yeah.
They were, what I mean? It was disgusting.
Yeah.
There was no standards anymore. You know, like Washington used to say, let's raise a standard. My God, we're so far from that. And as far as what you were saying with the creativity of teachers, well, the whole idea of a good teacher, as you say, is to try to impart knowledge in a way that it will actually get through to them. And so you have to think outside the box, because I remember at that time we were noticing our mediocrity slipping in, and I was taking class from this really cool mentor, sensei, dance choreographer, and he would stand on his head and sit up nights thinking of different ways to explain what he wanted us to understand, whether it was performing arts or whatever. He says, I've got to get this. He says, it took him sometimes a whole year, but it would finally, the combination of the words he said would sink in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what it takes to help people get through the thick skulls. And it's not, I'm not being mean, but that's just kind of a reality. And when the light bulb goes on, my God, I mean, I've seen it when I had five-year-old kids in tap class, and they get it, and they're so excited and happy. They're like little, happy as clams. And it is a reward. You know, it just makes it all worthwhile. So
this week, I had a young lady in ISS who was stuck on the part of Algebra 1 that involves the slope-intercept formula in standard form and going back and forth using two points on a linear equation, on a graph, on a line, and deducing the equation that will give you that line. And God bless that child. She struggled and struggled and struggled and finally got it. And it was as if somebody had just given me a birthday cake with 1,000 rockets going off around it. You know,
oh, sure.
She got it. And she did it right. God bless her. But
And you know what? And it's also a celebration in their hearts because they've accomplished something, and it's such a sweet treat. You know, it's wonderful. It's a win-win situation. And, what they're trying to do, I know what they're trying to do. This is beyond.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken communism and Pol Pot to a new level. This is my estimation of it.
Yep.
That's just my opinion of it. And this is where it's headed, so that's why we have to stop it.
Exactly.
There are people speaking out. So, we're going to fight them. We're not giving in.
Yep.
I agree.
Everybody who has a voice needs to raise it. I mean, I don't have your energy, darling. I can't run to every meeting and speak in front of city council. But I can, in my own subversive little way, in my happy little jail, get across to these kids.
Yeah.
Some of the things that they're not going to get in those god-awful collaborative classes.
I know.
And, so I'm the I'm kind of like the secret six, I guess, in Brian Kilmeade's book, the subversive in the school system. But I love teaching. I have always enjoyed teaching people things, even when I wasn't working directly in that profession. Every time, every job I've held has been disseminating information to people about something or other. And it seems to be my calling. It seems to be what I was made for, whatever you want to call it.
When you're getting this information to them, sort of on the QT or subversively or whatever, you remind me of the French Underground. Get that information.
Yeah, l'enfant de la patrie, le jeu de gloire est arrivé. Casablanca, everybody singing. Yeah, that's me.
Oh my gosh.
But it feels almost like that. And I'm a very transparent person in many ways. So thinking of me as being in any way, shape, or form subversive is really funny. But what I have to teach these kids over and above the academics is that you can do this, but it's not easy. And every single one of them that I get in there gets into a hissy fit at that something's hard. I mean, they sound like four-year-olds trying to use their hands to put something together, and they haven't developed all the motor coordination yet. It's hard. They cry and, it's okay. Let's try it again. These are 13- and 14-year-old kids. They shouldn't be whining about how hard it is at that age.
I know. Well, because they've been pampered too much, you got to tell them, explain to them, it's not about becoming easy, it's about becoming possible.
Exactly.
With a little effort, that's what you have to get across to them.
That's one of the things that David always said, being dyslexic and being diagnosed as dyslexic in the early 50s, before every learning disability meant, you poor thing, you don't have to do it, it's too hard, he was told flat out, look, this is going to be hard for you. It's going to take you longer and require more effort than it does for most of the people you know. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you've got to work your delicate little derriere off doing something that comes more easily to other people.
Sure.
And he absorbed that. He absorbed that into his being, and that was why he was and always will be my one and only love, because that was his understanding of the world.
Sure.
He didn't expect people to give him the moon on a string simply because he was cute, which he was. he knew that if you wanted something, you had to put forth effort for it. And he was smart enough to know that if he didn't really want it, why the hell put forth the effort? So
right.
the things that we really want in life, the things that are valuable to us,
sure.
don't come to us easily. We work for
exactly.
them, not necessarily with physical labor, sometimes with emotional labor or spiritual labor or intellectual labor, but we
right.
work for them. Because that which we achieve too easily, we value too lightly. And that understanding was one of the axioms, one of the unnecessary to speak truths upon which this nation was built. The people who came here left where they came from because they understood, I've got a shot at if I work hard enough, I can have more than I have here. It wasn't somebody's
exactly.
going to give it to me. It was the opportunity to work
yes.
for it and get it, not to be artificially held down or artificially raised up based on your birth, your lineage, your connections. Freedom to
right.
try. That's what we were
and
built on. We are teaching our children,
right.
trying is bad. It should be given to you.
It's horrible. Well,
it's
you
an
also mentioned with the progressives and the stifling of creativity,
mm-hmm.
and people to innovate or to create something from, you know, creating wealth from nothing or
mm-hmm.
making a new invention or, you know, making life easier in some aspect, finding a new product that, oh, I can make that better or I can do this and make, you know, life a little easier for ABC. Those things, if they stifle that, they're setting them up for failure, which
yes.
also is coincides with the evil central planning economically, because
yes.
profit is actually in incentive to innovate.
Yes,
and
yes, it is.
Because I'm doing my online Hillsdale course free, you know, the Econ 101,
mm-hmm.
and I love it because it's just
yes.
amazing. I'm kind of behind
yep.
a week and a half, but I'm getting there. And I'm almost to the end because I think there's only 2 weeks left, and it's 10
mm-hmm.
weeks, and it's fabulous. And it's Gary Wolfram, he's wonderful. To have a professor on my screen in my for free home, you know, from Hillsdale is just amazing.
Isn't
Thank
it great?
God for this technology. I'm
yeah.
so excited. And I never thought that I would want to learn about these things, but I thought, you know what,
mm-hmm.
if I'm going to figure out what's wrong with things going on that are going on in my country, I better learn what the hell I need to know. If I'm studying the Federal Reserve, I need to know every in and out of it. I need to know every
yes.
aspect of it.
Exactly.
So
because
it's helping.
Because you enjoy thinking, Linda, which makes you dangerous. Progressives don't like you. They don't like
oh,
me
no.
either. You know? They do not like us because we like thinking. We want to know more
yes.
stuff. We want to understand how this piece of information fits with this piece.
Sure.
And when you put them together, what happens with this third piece? Progressives are terrified of us.
Of course.
Because we're
well, too bad.
Because we are not going to nod and say, oh, thank you, Master, for the nice piece of bread. It's so tasty, and I'm so warm and cozy. Give me some more. No, we're not. We're going to ask, hey, wait a minute, what's in this bread? And they can't
exactly.
do that. And that's what they're
so
teaching our children. They are teaching them not
yeah.
to ask.
Sure. And the parents, of course, once they see this stuff, they're naturally objecting to it and throwing hissy
mm-hmm.
fits, and I don't blame them. I hope they do more of it. I've seen mm-hmm. some of the things on the Internet through Facebook, et cetera, and the Blaze talking about these items that
mm-hmm.
they're doing. They're destroying the Second Amendment, the First, you know,
mm-hmm.
the history.
The
they're rewriting this. They're giving these kids these multiple choice questions, and
uh-huh.
and they're the entire thought of actually doing real history and they're doing socio engineering on them, on their minds. I mean, it's evil.
Mm-hmm.
There was one, I think it was part of Common Core, or I'm not sure, but whether the parent or the student wrote it, and they had the four multiples and A through D, and it was that the legislators and the administration have come up with their gun safety regulation laws using the following, you know, model or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the choices was safety for society, and the others I can't remember, but the kid wrote in E, stupidity.
Yeah. Oh, I like
yeah,
that.
That was too funny.
The incredible ignorance, the same little girl who was working on linear equations, she's eighth grade, is also taking civics. And they are just past the first 9 weeks, and they've gone over the Constitution and the three branches of government and what they do. And yet she was absolutely astonished when I told her, no, honey, the president doesn't make laws. He doesn't? But I thought he makes everything.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what in the name of heaven were you doing in your civics class besides your nails?
You know, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. The president makes
laws.
Wow. Well, this one does with executive orders, but that's not
his
function.
And the problem, I know, the problem is they're not stopping him. No one's stopping him.
No,
and
they're not.
I get so angry. That's what makes me more angry than what he's doing is they're not even trying, I don't think. That's
I know.
Galls me.
Oh, have you seen those disgusting television ads for the new MSNBC.com?
I don't think so.
Oh, they will make you want to vomit. I mean, I have to mute the damn thing. Pardon my French, but I do.
Yeah.
With pictures of that creature and then all these feet taking steps, and we're not going to quit. We're going to go forward. We're going to stand up for social justice. And I'm sitting here thinking, holy mother.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
guess what website I won't visit.
Right. The social justice is all about Dahlin. This is Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. This is they're using the same terminology constantly. This leads to death, destruction, misery, and a lot of hell on earth. I mean, it's not going to work. And this national health care is
not going
to work. And it's going to be. And I kind of disagree with the guy that was on Beck today because he was saying, I think his name is David Buckner. He was saying that once this thing's entrenched, you'll never get rid of it. But I think not. I think it's the will to do it. Because we have the will to do these things. We can make do. I believe so, too. Maybe I think there might be two things that may have to happen first, either a revolution or the Christ returning. But
possibly an economic complete meltdown.
Oh, if that's coming.
It.
I just don't know when.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe 2 to 5 years, and I really do. So
I do, too.
I think God is
David
working his
too.
Magic, you know, because my mother's birthday is tomorrow. She's going to turn 90, bless her heart, so I'm doing a special thing.
Bless her heart. Well, happy birthday to her from me. That's great. That's
and
wonderful.
I just love your show, and I want you to finish up, and I'll go back in the chat room. You're doing a great job, as always. My favorite
sensei. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
Thanks so much, darling. Take care, sweetie.
Bye-bye.
My friend Linda from that delightfully free state, California. Well, it used to be. But anyway, Linda tries to call in each Thursday, and I'm so glad she does because that girl is my heroine. She really is. She works her delicate derriere off standing up for what she believes to be right, and I give her all honor and all praise for it. I have such a wonderful extended family, ladies and gentlemen, and patriot families. Linda is one of them, my friend Yolanda, Bill Strong, Lonnie, Chad, Doc, so many of you out there who see the handwriting on the wall, who know how great this country really is, not because we're special in some way or because we've, been anointed by the divine to do this, no, but because of the principles and the truths upon which we were founded, and that one shining beacon of liberty, the freedom to try, the opportunity to fly. That's what this country's about. That's what our schools used to be about. They were to be the great levelers. They were to be the way in which every single child in this nation had an open door to opportunity so that none would be held back because they couldn't read or couldn't do math or didn't understand history or how the government works. Every single child had access to learning and the chance to take that learning as far as its little legs and its little mind would let it. That was what they were supposed to be for, ladies and gentlemen. Not turning us into the Borg collective, not taking your children as property of the state, not using you as breeding animals to create a workforce that underlies and holds up people with little intellectual ability and evil hearts. It saddens me because I went through the public school system when it still did that. When it still taught our children that if you try really hard, you can master this. When it taught our children that learning was of value for its own sake. And that an A meant that you had succeeded at something difficult and mastered it. Not that the teacher liked you, or your mommy was on the school board, or they didn't want you to feel bad. I was so lucky to be born when I was, a child of the greatest generation, with parents and teachers and leaders who still believed in the principles upon which this nation was founded, who understood that alike and equal do not mean the same thing, who wanted every single citizen of this nation to feel that his or her opportunity was unlimited, not that his or her success was assured. We have never in our history guaranteed success to anybody at anything, ladies and gentlemen, until the recent past. Because you cannot guarantee success. Success at anything is a variable formula made up of thinking and feeling and doing, some luck and lots of effort. And that doesn't come as a gift wrapped in pretty paper with a government stamp on the ribbon. That comes from inside the mind and the heart of the individual. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what Common Core is seeking to destroy. You cannot codify the human spirit on a flash drive and plug it into the appropriate computer to create anything. We aren't digitized machines, ladies and gentlemen, and our children should never be taught that they are or could be, or that they would even suggest that they might want to be. Common Core is the doorway to creating as close to the Borg collective as progressives can get, given the flawed human material with which they have to work. And I, for one, do not wish to be a member of the Borg collective. I would infinitely prefer to be the square peg in the round hole I have always been. A little odd, a little different, a little strange. But this is the reason that I continue to teach. This is the reason that I continue to do a job for which I am paid very little. Not because I'm going to be famous, not because I'm going to get rich, not because somebody is going to come along, pat me on the back, and give me a shiny trophy, but because it is the right thing for me to do. I'm used to not expecting instant gratification, simply because I do teach. Teaching is not an instant gratification profession, ladies and gentlemen. Very often, many of us never know the effect we've had on our kids. If we're very, very lucky, a student will come back 10, 20, 30 years after they've passed through our hands and hearts and tell us what we have meant to them. if we're very lucky. We continue to do what we do because we know that we do have an effect. Even if we never hear about it, even if we're never praised for it, even if we're never thanked for it. Because to us, the most wonderful high in the world is watching that light go on and hearing that kid say, "I get it. Now I understand." There's no artificial or natural high to match it. I can tell you that for a fact, ladies and gentlemen. The closest is that baby's first word or baby's first step that a parent glows to see and hear. I believe in this nation, ladies and gentlemen, and the citizens of it. I believe that we can repair our educational system. And I believe that we will. Because I am a firm believer in the power of the human spirit. And history has shown me that you cannot extinguish that permanently. There always will be teachers, ladies and gentlemen, who will nurture that spark. Even if they have to do it behind walls or in a basement or whispering in secret locations. And the other thing that Common Core is doing, which was so aptly expressed by the young man in the YouTube video I saw, it is making teachers into irrelevant hangers-on in the educational system. And that is one of the most criminal aspects of Common Core. I can learn a great deal from a computer in that I can research, I can seek out knowledge and information, I can look things up. But in that case, I am teaching myself. The computer is not teaching me. The computer is my textbook. I am learning from that textbook. And that is what our children do in the Common Core classroom, except they don't have the additional effect of learning from the person who is helping them through the academic path. Teachers don't just teach facts and figures and dates and historical periods and foreign languages. They teach principles and ethics and behavior and hope. Thank you all for being here tonight, folks. And I hope you'll join me 2 weeks from tonight. Patriot Education will be off the air next Thursday. It's Thanksgiving, and I want my family, extended and personal, to be enjoying the fruits of their labors with each other. I'm looking forward to being back here on Thursday after Thanksgiving. I believe that's the 6th of December. And meanwhile, I ask you all to stand up for what you believe, examine what your children are being taught, and live the kind of person you would like them to be. Thank you to all the folks who listened in and all the folks in the chat room and the people at Patriot Families for their continued support. And I ask you to keep believing in the greatness of this nation. As always, all my love to my greatest fan. Good night, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.